and welcome to the ASR TI Trade and Logistics conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Zara Ward-Murphy. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Okay, thanks very much, and thank you everyone who's joined us on this call. My name is Zara Ward-Murphy. I'm a strategist at Absolute Strategy Research, an independent financial market research house. And I'm joined on the line today by Professor John Manners-Bell, who's Chief Executive for Transport Intelligence, a leading consultancy in the logistics space. Now, just before we start, if you registered your interest in this call, you will have been sent a slide pack that we'll talk to. So if you want to be pulling that up from your email, if you don't have it to hand, don't worry, you can go to either the ASR or the TI website, and you'll be able to find the pack there. Whilst you're doing that, may I just say that both John and I believe that global trade and logistics is a very exciting topic, relevant particularly at the moment to politics, to economics, and to markets alike. And to this end, we really just wanted to offer a series of short monthly calls to explore this area and to keep on top of the latest developments. So the idea is that each time I'll cover a bit of the macro in terms of the latest global trade and logistics numbers, and that John will delve a bit deeper into some of the company stories and industry developments, and with the hope, perhaps, that we find something interesting at the intersection of the macro and the micro narrative. The plan is that we will speak for maybe 10 to 15 minutes each and then open the line for questions. The call should be no more than 30 minutes in total. A short bit of housekeeping. First, for you to be aware that we should have a mix of ASR and TI clients on the line today. And second, to reassure you that whilst John will be talking about some specific companies, you will not be exposed to any material non-public information. And with that, let's just get on with it. So first, I wanted to update you on the latest logistics data. Some of the most informative and most timely data that we have on global trade is what I call logistics data. Specifically, this is air freight series and container shipping data. It's timely data. It's on volumes of freight shifting around the globe. If I start with the European air freight, our proxy, which takes in a number of large European airports, suggests that growth in European air freight has been fairly modest in recent months. The latest data are currently for August, and we saw growth there in volumes of around 1.5% year-on-year. If you turn to page one of the pack, we can see that the level of activity, the gold line, has been trending higher over the past year, but that the pace of growth, which is the green line, has been fairly muted and it's even been softening a little bit recently. There are two reasons, however, I'd point out that I think our European proxy might be slightly underestimating the extent of European air freight activity at the moment, and that's based on data that have not yet been captured into our proxy. The first is Italian air freight growth. That has been fairly robust this year, quite consistently, averaging around 5% growth versus 2% for our overall Eurozone proxy. And the second is on account of a new data set I've just found from the German Airport Association, which covers air freight for the whole of Germany rather than just Frankfurt, which until recently had formed the core of our proxy. So albeit that Frankfurt air freight, it has still been performing the function of being a really good cyclical indicator for various macro market and fundamental growth theories, I have been worried that it was losing a bit of market share, and this wider data set does appear to bear this out. So it suggests that freight growth has been stronger at other German airports in recent quarters than it has at Frankfurt. And in fact, if we look at the last 12 months, the monthly data, Frankfurt's been stronger than the national proxy only twice out of those 12 months. While Frankfurt is easily the single biggest airport for freight in Germany, it accounts for about half the total volume of freight. It does mean that the other airports together account for the other half. Most significantly, it's the second largest airport, which is Leipzig, that is seeing much stronger growth at the moment and gradually gaining market share on Frankfurt. So Leipzig actually 10 years ago accounted for less than 1% of air freight in Germany. That number now is 22%, and it's occurred as DHL has consolidated their European business around Leipzig over that period. So with respect to these German and Italian data, I am looking at expanding our European proxy to get the fullest possible picture without sacrificing too much in terms of timeliness. That's why Italy wasn't included before, but if I'm going to wait now for Paris and to get the national German numbers in, that may be included as well. So just to be aware of these two possible reasons for the underestimation of activity growth. And finally, on European air freight, I'd just like to point out there was a very strong bounce in Spanish air freight in August. That was up 13% year-on-year. That would have given a good read on a stronger-than-expected industrial production number that we saw in the market last week. And again, for Germany, I'd note that the broader German air freight indicator on this occasion would have provided a better signal for the stronger than expected industrial production we saw from Germany as well last week. If I move now to our Asia air freight proxy, here the latest data are actually a bit more vibrant. So as we can see on slide two, after a relatively muted start to the year, since June we've really seen a pickup in activity. Year-on-year growth over the last 3 months has been around 5 to 7% in Asia. Slide three shows that that improvement has actually been quite broad-based and actually even including Japan. Furthermore, the earliest September data that we've had out just this week is also quite encouraging. So we get data for Shanghai ahead of the China overall data, and for September that showed volumes up 5% year-on-year, so relatively robust. It was driven by strong inbound freight, actually, up 14% year-on-year. Outbound freight was around flat. So perhaps pointing more to strengthening domestic demand in China, which is a point I'll come back to. Moreover, we had data for Korea's largest airport released today. We saw growth there of nearly 8% year-on-year in September, and activity actually reached a new high in seasonally adjusted terms. That's particularly encouraging because we've seen some weakness in the Korean PMI data recently. The other indicator that points to a relative pickup in Asian activity is the shipping data. The Asian container freight data, which is shown on slide five, has been on an improving trend over the past 6 months. Growth picks up to 6% year-on-year in August. Now, this series really is dominated by volumes in China, but also Korean volumes are at a relatively high level. And encouragingly, we're also seeing a sign of bottoming out at Hong Kong and Singapore. So these two ports really have been losing a lot of market share to China, and has seen quite a contraction in activity recently. But we are seeing a sign of stabilization of activity in both of those. And then finally, U.S. loaded container volumes, they were up only 1% year-on-year in August, and that was led by exports, by outbound volumes. Inbound volumes to the U.S. West Coast fell 3% year-on-year, although this was partly due to a strong seasonal peak in August last year. So if you can take a look at slide six, and if you focus on the red line, which is the line for 2016, you can see that in level terms in August this year, we did still see a seasonal pickup in inbound freight volumes, and it was the highest volume so far this year. So if I put all these four series together, both our global air freight and global container shipping proxies are currently indicating a pickup in global trade growth going into the fourth quarter of the year. Now, at this point, I can almost hear some of you saying that doesn't sound quite right. Haven't we been seeing a lot of headlines about global trade? Isn't it flat? Isn't it going backwards? And it is very much odds, I think, with the latest data and the headlines that we've seen in the press about overall global trade. According to the widely followed monthly numbers that you get from the CPB, global trade growth has been basically flat this year, and it actually, a bit alarmingly, fell almost 1% year-on-year in July, according to the latest data, although do note this lags a bit, it is July. And you can see the series on slide 7, and it is a fairly downbeat picture. The year-to-date weakness in trade has seen the WTO recently slash its trade growth forecast for both this year and next. And more generally, the papers have been full of warnings about the backlash against globalization and the disappearance of the global trade multiplier, which means that global trade is no longer growing faster than the overall economic, than the overall economy. So perhaps just a few comments on this and on the global trade data versus our logistics data. So note that the CPB global trade data is trading goods. It is a volume series, so therefore it is comparable with our logistics proxies on that. Neither should be picking up directly FX changes or any deflationary effects evident in global trade. Probably the key difference between our logistics data set and the global trade series is that my logistics proxies don't really capture trading commodities, particularly in raw form, because this doesn't tend to come under container shipping. It comes under dry or liquid bulk shipping. Muted global growth and also China's goal of rebalancing from investment to consumption, that does present a persistent headwind to trade in commodities. Although I think the specific weakness that we've seen in the latest global trade data looks a bit more like seasonal noise to me. So the global trade numbers anyway are pretty noisy month to month, but in July, particularly the weakness came from Asian imports, and I think we can trace that back to China commodity imports in July. I think it was seasonal. I think it was a base effect related to a big parade that there was in September last year. because we saw this import growth bounce back again in August. And that suggests to me the August trade growth number, when it's published later this month, isn't going to look as bad as July. I'm definitely not looking for a further contraction in activity. With respect to all those headlines from the IMF and the WTO a week or so ago, both bodies were offering strong warnings against protectionism. Now, in part, of course, it is in the interest of these bodies in terms of their own survival to say such things, but they're also raising very valid concerns that slower trade growth could impact overall global growth, could impact productivity growth, and a knock-on effect onto job creation globally. And I think this is a very live and very topical debate. As well as protectionism, though, the IMF did point to other reasons for slower growth in the trade of goods. And one of those was the shifting pattern in consumption towards more consumption of services and more digital commerce, which I thought was a good point. However, the IMF actually put three-quarters of the recent weakness in global trade growth down to weak overall economic growth and investment. The WTO mentioned in particular slower growth in China, which is probably at least partly structural, I would say, but also Brazil and the US. So possibly you could think that was a little bit more cyclical. The medium-term outlook for global trade growth, therefore, does remain challenging, and not least given this rising political headwinds and the continued muted global growth environment. Nonetheless, our logistic indicators do suggest some near-term improvement in activity. This is illustrated on slide 8. Here we see our logistics proxies pointing to a pickup in global trade. Note the chart on the left-hand side is just kind of zooming in. That's a shorter-term version of a slightly larger chart, just to show that both the container shipping and air freight proxies are pointing to a pickup in global trade and do have a fairly good fit over the history of the series with that global trade series, notwithstanding the differences I've just highlighted. One reason that we could see a pickup in trade growth going into the end of this year could be restocking. Our economics team have been flagging for a while the potential for some support coming through in the second half of this year from the inventory cycle. And that perhaps is one of the reasons why we've seen some of these PMI data just bouncing back recently in the September readings. The final idea I'd just like to highlight today is about Asia. So in terms of our equity view, we are overweight Asia ex-Japan and positive on the region longer term based on faster growth in the region, an emerging middle class and a big population. I've already noted particularly strong growth in Asia air freight and container shipping. Now, given that similar strength is not really showing up elsewhere as being on the other side of this, one theme we're developing here is whether or not there may be more of a regional trade growth story developing in terms of Asian domestic demand and intra-regional demand. There does appear to be some support for this in the data. If you take a look at slide 9, I show here some detail from the latest China PMI survey and also the ASEAN PMI survey, which is a relatively new one. And you can see here the overall orders are currently stronger than export orders, i.e. domestic demand is picking up more than export demand. And then if you look at slide 10, you can see a new indicator I've built for intra-Asia trade. And you can see that intra-Asia trade as a percentage of total global trading goods has really stepped up since the financial crisis, from around 10% of the total to 14% of the total. And this perhaps links to the disappearance of the trade multiplier that I mentioned earlier, at least as one cause, and also perhaps puts that disappearance in a slightly less negative light, I think. So firstly, I'd emphasize that in recent years, both global output and global trade have continued to grow, albeit quite slowly at times. But what has changed is that trade is no longer growing faster than output. And we can see this on slide 11, in the flattening out of the green line, which is global trade divided by global output. What we can also see here, though, in terms of regions, is that this flattening out has very much been driven by the decline in the red line, which is Asia, and with that decline representing falling trade relative to output in Asia. Or to put it another way, and in support of our positive Asia theme, with Asia growing faster than the rest of the world and Western demand muted, Asia is becoming increasingly less reliant on export demand and has increasingly been supplying more of its own demand. So I'm going to leave my download there for this time, and with that I am going to hand over to John, who's going to update us on a few of the latest developments within the logistics industry. John.
Thank you very much, Zara. Some very interesting data sets there, and some good positive messages, I think, to take out of that in part as well. As Zara said, I'm going to be focusing on some of the, I suppose you could call them sort of micro level events which have occurred in the last couple of months or so. And I hope you'll find this interesting intersection between Zara's take on the data and the quantitative side and my analysis of some of the impacts which that had on the logistics and transport industry. I'm going to spend just four slides, first two talking about the Hanjin entering administration, the shipping line Hanjin, and then I'm going to be talking a little bit about DHL's acquisition of UK Mail, just to conclude. But I think this is a very good example, actually, of the impact of a micro impact of some of these macro trends that Zara's been talking about. Because in the last few weeks, as everyone will be aware, the Hanjin has entered administration. And the key reason for this, of course, is the vast amount of oversupply of capacity in the global container shipping market. And that's had a real impact on shipping rates for a considerable amount of time now. And that's caused distress to even the largest shipping lines. Just to give you an idea, Alphaliner suggests that rates in the first 6 months of 2016 were down a quarter on those in 2015. And that's impacted even upon the strongest and best run shipping lines such as Maersk, where we've seen profits dramatically drop away from $1.2 billion in the first half of 2015 to a loss of $114 million in the first half of this year. So obviously that's going to have some dramatic repercussions throughout the industry. And that's exactly what happened to Hanjin. Its creditors, it's a privately owned shipping line, but its creditors were led by the state bank, pulled the rug after a series of months of negotiation. Now, since then, management has blamed its problems on the state subsidy of many of its competitors, especially those coming from China, Japan, and even French and German shipping lines. They accuse them of dumping capacity on the marketplace in some of the key trade lanes. And that, of course, has depressed shipping rates and made it impossible for Hanjin to continue. What impact will that have on the market? Well, Hanjin has a fleet size of about 600,000 TEUs, and that's already come out of the marketplace. Some of it may re-enter in the next few months when Hanjin comes out of administration. People are talking about a much smaller shipping line operating on feeder trade lanes rather than global trade lanes, and maybe it will end up with about 200,000 TEUs. Now, when Hanjin went into administration, there was a bounce back in shipping rates, but that was very short-lived. And now we've seen that rates are heading down again, and that's because of this structural problem with overcapacity in the marketplace. There will be benefits for other of its competitors. For example, the Korean line, High-End Merchant Marine, which is also in problem, having problems, that will be a better place to mop up some of the demand. And other competitors are already pushing some of their spare capacity onto these trade lanes as well. I think it's interesting to see that over the last 10 years, the top five container shipping lines now control over 50%, maybe around 54-55% of the fleet, global fleet. And this is up from just over a third in 2005. So there has been considerable restructuring, although much of this restructuring doesn't result in shipping lines going out of business. And we'll talk about that in the next slide a little bit more. So if we move to the next slide, slide 13. Now, of course, as I've mentioned, there's been an overwhelming amount of spare capacity brought into the market over the last few years by aggressive shipbuilding programs of the largest shipping companies. And there's really no sign that trade volumes, the underlying demand in the economy, will increase at the rate required to soak up this new capacity. And looking forward, Zara was already talking about the trade multiplier and how that's not really working anymore. So we're seeing much more of a sort of one-to-one alignment with economic growth. And maybe we can talk about that in some of the calls coming up ahead. And of course, many of the shipping lines are being propped up by the state. They have been called zombie shipping lines, especially after the last recession, the Great Recession, because so much state money was being pushed into them to bring them back from the dead. And that will continue to depress rates in the future. So just a few other issues which have impacted upon the market. We've seen China shipping container lines merging with Costco as a result of the low rates again. We've seen APL acquired by CMA CGM. We've seen the Middle Eastern shipping line UASC acquired by Hapag-Lloyd. We've even seen Maersk separated into a new division. And, of course, I mentioned HMM being restructured, and it's not clear what sort of future they have. So what is the upshot for the containing shipping industry? Well, we certainly see there's going to be more mergers and acquisitions in the coming few years as some of the weaker players are mopped up by some of the stronger players. That will result in less choice for shippers, and eventually that will result in a gradual increase in rates, although I wouldn't want to overstress this because there is all this capacity in the marketplace. It may just be better managed by a fewer number of large shipping lines. Just to reemphasize this point, Maersk has said we need to be able to grow market share organically, and we will also consider acquisitions if the right opportunities develop. So they very much see themselves as one of the consolidators. So let's move to slide number 14 and take a quick change of pace into the express industry. In the last 2 weeks, we've seen DHL has acquired UK Mail, which has been a UK express player. So many of you will have come across them in the past because they had a relationship with FedEx at one point. But they are a large player in the UK market. They have traditionally been a B2B operator, although they have significant B2C volumes. Recently, they've had problems when they moved a new hub. They were initiated a new automated hub, which put a lot of stress on operations as well as capital. And this resulted in an impact on profitability. And since then, we've seen a change of their CEO, which many believe made it quite vulnerable to take over. And that's exactly what's happened. Now, DHL has a history within the UK market. It's acquired in the early 2000s. But then pulled out in about 2011 from the UK domestic market because it was so unprofitable. It was impossible money for them. That came as part of their strategy at the time to back and focus on their higher margin international business, which I have to say they did very successfully, increasing their profitability very substantially. So it begs the question, why do they want to re-enter what is a very tough market, the UK domestic market? In fact, all domestic express markets are difficult. Well, there are four main reasons for this, which I've outlined here. Firstly is the growth of the domestic e-commerce volumes. I think I've seen figures that suggest that the UK market, in terms of e-commerce, will be growing at about 10% a year over the next 5 years. And there are very few parts of the logistics market which are growing at that sort of growth rate. DHL have already increased their presence in France. They've bought a 27.5% stake in the e-commerce parcel specialist Relais Colis earlier in the year. They have obviously a very strong position in Germany. They are investing heavily. I saw a press release today about investing in Austria in terms of their sorting facilities there. And so they really see this as a major part of their strategy moving forward. Now, of course, it's a difficult market, it's a low-margin market, and they'll have to do a very good job to make sure that it doesn't impact them too much on their mix of volumes and their mix of margins. Second point, cross-border e-commerce volumes. Well, this is an area where DHL has been very successful in and is growing very quickly as well. To quote from DHL themselves, they say the ongoing expansion of our parcel network in Europe is driven by increasing demand within our e-commerce customer base for cross-border deliveries. Now, UK Mail doesn't have much in the way of international volumes. It has some, but not much. So therefore, we can see it as adding that last-mile capability for delivering imported international cross-border e-commerce volumes. Thirdly, there are synergistic benefits. UKML was very expensive, by some analysts put it about 20 times earnings, which is way above what we'd expect to be paid for an express company. But there could be significant value released by combining with DHL's existing international volumes and its existing operations as well in the UK, which can release that value. And finally, obviously DHL has a large amount of cash, which is not being put to a large amount of use because of low interest rates at the moment. And so it may be part of their strategy that they want to invest in these small but profitable entities. UKML was very profitable, even after its problems with its movement of its hub and the operational difficulties it had there. Margins dropped to just over 6%. Usually they're about 9 to 10%. Which is almost unheard of in this particular sector. So it could be run as a standalone and just returning a good level of profitability. So finally, just to wrap up my section, just a few other things. Obviously, the express industry has been very busy this year. We've seen the FedEx complete the acquisition of TNT for just under $5 billion in May. And that's given it a big, extensive ground network, which will allow it to compete against DHL, UPS, but other companies as well in the road freight sector, the Schenkers, Kuehne Nagels, Judas, for example. We've seen Royal Mail very recently buy a Californian-based regional next-day parcel delivery company, Golden State Overnight Delivery Service. It has presence in three major states in the U.S., and that's part of what they call a careful and focused geographic expansion. I think that's the one to watch. I don't know whether that's part of a broader strategy to build out a U.S. operation, or it may be that they've seen an ad hoc opportunity crop up and decide to invest in it as a way of making money in much the same way as DHL has invested in UK Mail. But we've also seen Amazon very active this year, and I think that would be, if I was to throw up a note of caution for DHL and its strategy to enter into domestic markets, Amazon would be a good reason they shouldn't, just because they are the main disruptor or the potential to disrupt all the express markets. They've already established their air cargo network in US, one's following in Europe. They've established sorting centers by which to disintermediate the express sector. By that, I mean they will channel their own volumes into regional and local express players rather than use the major express companies. And they're looking at maybe going head-to-head with FedEx and UPS in the United States. And just to conclude, just a quote from them, which shows they're not just interested in moving their own volumes about, but they're interested in becoming a third-party player. They say, we know we're very good at logistics. Why shouldn't we turn that into an infrastructure offer that others can use? So I think that should be a big warning to many of the incumbent players within the express parcel sector. And maybe that's an area that we can explore in some of the calls ahead. So on that that last note, I'd like to hand back to the operator to see if there are any more questions you'd like to raise. I know we're at the end of our 3:30, our half an hour call, but if there are any questions, please raise them. If not, both Zara and I will be looking forward to taking your questions offline. Thank you very much.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will pause just for a moment to allow everyone to signal. As a reminder, star 1 to ask a question. There are no questions over the phone at this time.
Okay, thank you very much. In which case, as John said, we don't want to run over, but we are very happy to hear from anyone who does have a question offline. We're very keen to make this a conversation, not just a one-sided download. And on that note, we do hope that you can join us for our call next month. This is scheduled to be on Thursday, the 3rd of November at 3 p.m. The same time. So thank you very much, everyone. For your participation, and we will speak soon. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank
bye-bye.
You.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That will conclude today's Equity Strategy Conference Call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.